Ashley Homestore's biggest President's Day sleep sale is going on now. For a limited time, save on mattresses from Sealy, Ashley Sleep, Tempur-Pedic, and more. Adjust your mattress to fit your needs and pay no interest for 5 years. Select Tempur-Pedic adjustable mattress sets up to $500 off. Plus, get a free $300 gift with purchase. Wake refreshed with all new Sealy Response Queen mattresses starting at just $599. Shop the President's Day sleep sale at Ashley Homestore. Financing is available with approved credit on qualifying purchases. See store for details.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our new podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long stories. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint.
Welcome to this Pre-The Sarah podcast. My colleague Ajay will not make it for this episode, but worry not, we have an erudite guest. In recent months, there have been a lot of conversations by companies and governments about reducing dependence on Chinese exports. The triggers are evident. Companies want to guard against disruptions to supply chains after China's lockdown earlier this year, after the pandemic, and to find low-cost labor. There are also geopolitical considerations, be it in the US or more recently in India. To discuss this and more, we have today China watcher Rahul Jacob. He was FT's South China correspondent between 2010 and 2013. Rahul has been closely watching this developing story. Earlier this year, he had argued in a long story that India's attempts to attract factories from China have underestimated the Middle Kingdom's competitive edge. In his latest piece, he argues that something has changed in the past 4 weeks. Let's find out.
Hi, Rahul. Good to have you on board on The Signal and the Noise.
Hi, Sunit. Good to be able to chat.
So, you know, over the past month or so, we've been discussing Vietnam and Bangladesh as two possible stories of economic success in Asia. And you're clearly a reporter soothsayer because both countries are very much in the news today. So why do you feel the race to replace China's export production is heating up now?
Well, it's a combination of a problem that has been around for quite a few years now. The very sharp increase in wages from 2010 onwards in southern China first, and then it spread across China, which was actually interestingly pushed through by the Chinese government because they wanted to make sure that workers in that area were happy after a few suicides at a Foxconn factory in Shenzhen and strikes at Honda and a couple of Honda part manufacturers in 2010. And so the government moved and pushed up wages. And since then, China has become too expensive for labor-intensive products such as shoes, garments to a large degree, and certain other toys, for instance. So some of this has been ongoing, but then COVID has accelerated it because the problem of wages is now almost secondary to the need to essentially diversify production bases. The world realized that it was overly dependent on China and feels that it needs to have options. And so Vietnam and Bangladesh, in different ways, are both Bangladesh is more response to the high costs in labor-intensive production of garments. And Vietnam is an all-rounder. It seems to be able to do sneakers at one end and smartphones at the other. And at some point, its wages are going to start going up. And there's already been some movement of factories from Vietnam to Cambodia and Laos at the lower end of labor-intensive spectrum. So this is a kind of ongoing process that has been accelerated by COVID.
But you actually end up saying that Vietnam is on the race, on the way to becoming the next Asian tiger. Is that, how do you justify that?
I would actually argue that it's already an Asian tiger. The growth levels have been significantly higher than much of Asia for some years now. It is a classic Asian tiger in the sense of being heavily export-led in its growth. The fact that its exports went up 25% last year is an indication of that. The exports are still rising through this year. And again, this underlines its tiger status. There are about three or four economies in the world that are going to grow in 2020. One is China, and the other is Vietnam, and a third is Taiwan. So these are all Asian tigers, essentially. So whether to call Vietnam an Asian tiger in the making is perhaps actually doing it a disservice. I think it's well on its way, and it's probably arrived.
I think one factor which you mentioned is that COVID-19 hasn't really affected Vietnam.
Yes. Now, that actually is something that people overlook. And this is, again, a facet that every Asian tiger has invested in public health to such an extent that they have been able to ride through COVID almost without stumbling. So Taiwan is the most extreme example of this. It never, ever had a lockdown. There's no country in the world that has escaped as unscathed as Taiwan without a lockdown. And the simple reason is that the lessons of SARS were learnt best by the Asian tigers. That's one factor. The second is that they are all investing massive amounts in health, public health care. So Vietnam, for instance, spends 6 to 7% of GDP on public health care. India spends 1.5%. So no prizes for guessing who is going to come out of the COVID pandemic in better shape.
Let's move to Bangladesh, which was in the news when the IMF said it would momentarily surpass India's per capita income in 2020. While that may be a temporary phenomenon, what does its success tell us?
So the first thing to kind of emphasize is that, you know, it's about $11 or something. And it is, as you say, a temporary phenomenon. It's going to be this year in part because the Bangladesh taka has appreciated against the dollar, and in part because Bangladesh is going to actually grow as well, have positive GDP, while we are probably going to shrink by 10 to 12%. So that aside, I mean, there's a school of thought that following GDP numbers alone doesn't actually tell you that much about an economy. In India, we are absolutely obsessed, and starting with the business press, which ought to know better, with this absurd notion of being the fastest growing economy. This used to be enunciated quarter by quarter and pretty much across the board in the business press, to my horror, when India was growing faster than any other major economy. That really isn't an achievement for a country as poor as India. And it's laughable that we go on making such a big deal about it. So in a way, to make a big deal of Bangladesh passing us, you know, for this year would be similarly paradoxical. But the main thing to understand in Bangladesh's case is that, as we all know, in 1971, it was dismissed by Henry Kissinger as a basket case. And the GDP number is actually secondary in importance to what it's achieved on lowering maternal mortality rates, on eradicating open defecation, on bringing down malnutrition, which is related to eradicating open defecation because people get dysentery, and children in particular under 5 don't die off being malnourished because of repeated bouts of diarrhea. So these are things that we tend to overlook in India, and we think, you know, our decacorns and unicorns are going to take us sailing over some rainbow of growth. The reason Bangladesh is starting to grow as fast as it is and why it's done so well in garments is because many, many more women work in Bangladesh than India. And I think that's actually one of the things I'm kind of shocked by and ashamed by at the same time.
I couldn't agree with you more. A healthy economy and obviously an educated workforce and healthy workforce is a key to achieving that. So that's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But for some reason, we've been tardy in, you know, taking that on. Now, moving to India, where, you know, India has been taking some steps recently. You write in your piece also to build export competitiveness. But you remain at heart a skeptic, and you ask India to stop seeing Chinese dreams, you know, dreams of kind of overtaking China or dreams of even supplementing China. Why do you feel that?
Just because we've seen this movie many times before. I mean, in 2010, I was working for the FT in Southern China, and the news editor used to keep saying, there are companies moving away from China, and I would rush out and try and find some. And really, in 2010, it was a struggle to find. Most of them were actually moving to Northern China. They were moving away from the higher costs in Southern China. But many were actually resorting to using robots, which is, again, an undertold story about China's continuing kind of lead in many export industries, is the level of mechanization and robots that they are using. I think they're the second largest, but this is completely off the top of my head, but I think they're the second largest buyer of robots in the world. So that in itself tells you something. So I'm skeptical not so much, not just about India's ability to be a second China, but really about anyone's ability to be a second China. I mean, China is in Asia, who followed it for a long time in places like Hong Kong and Singapore, say there will never be another China. And that sounds like a kind of, you know, something that you could easily knock down. But when you think about it, the 1980s, when China opened up, and then, you know, when it joined the WTO, this was a kind of sweet spot for world trade. And the world's largest country in terms of population joined the global trading system. Now, we aren't in that position today. The world's second largest country may or may not, and with India, it's never quite clear to me whether we are pro-free trade or we're not. My sense is that we're not, and in which case, it's a contradiction in terms to be an export-led country when you are as often as not talking about protectionism. But the whole world is now protectionist. So China was lucky in the sense that it had rather extraordinary leadership, and I mean Zhu Rongji and Zhao Ziyang more than Deng Xiaoping, but they were hell-bent on reforming that economy, and they were in no two minds about building a huge export base, and that's why they succeeded. They also had the advantage of the Taiwanese and Hong Kong Chinese diaspora, who had been doing this for 30 years already. So India can boast as much as it likes, and Vietnam will have the same problem, about having Sundar Pichai as the CEO of Google and Satya Nadella as the CEO of Microsoft. But really, what you need is lots of small and medium enterprises in your diaspora, and sadly, we don't have that. So that's another reason, you know, India will struggle. But the real struggle in India is really in New Delhi, which has to make up its mind whether the Congress is in power or the BJP, whether we want to open our doors, you know, throw them open to trade. And it's certainly the reduction in tariffs from 1991 to about 2014 was, by Indian standards, spectacular. But we're going the other way at the moment. So we have to kind of decide what we want to be.
So political will and less bureaucracy. Thanks, Rahul. That was excellent, very informative. And I'm sure our listeners would have enjoyed this. To all of you who are listening to this podcast, I hope this new format has helped you figure out this big story of our times. Do send us feedback. And as always, stay healthy. Thanks for listening. Bye.
You have been listening to The Signal and the Noise, with me being the signal, of course. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on @HTSmartcast. Or you can also reach out to us personally
at Sunit Arora
and at AJ Axiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to HTSmartcast.com. We'll be back next week with a new story and some awesome banter.
And lots of fun.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Miles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.